Josh, how long have you been working in cancer research?
In general, from 1969. So, how many years?
A long time.
It's a long time.
Okay. Now, have you seen much progress in that time?
Very much so. In deep understanding of the most complex problem in cancer, which will be why cancer cells spread and grow in other organ, which is the major cause of death from cancer, we have a significant additional understanding now to what we did 40 years ago.
And yet, what I picked up from your talk was the problems in methodology that still persist and permeate all of cancer research.
We have far more sophisticated questions now. To reach the answers, we need different methods than what we have. Many of the simpler questions have been answered, but unfortunately they reveal the lack of understanding on a deeper level. We need to improve our methodology to answer those more specific and more complicated questions.
And you were mentioning that just changing the glucose composition of substrates that you grow cancer cells on makes a huge difference, and there's no standardization between groups in this country, never mind around the world.
Well, the specific illustration was that if one resorts to examining expression of specific genes, the mere change of glucose concentration of cells that grow in tissue culture leads to altered expression of these genes. While in the past we used tools such as microscopes to study cells under culture, or even staining with particular antibodies, we did not detect these differences. Now that we delve into far and far more sophisticated methods to determine differences among cells, we realize that every little thing can change expression of these genes. And I would imagine if we go to other methods, we may discover that the differences exist even on a deeper level.
And you were telling us about some of your new research.
4 years ago, I decided to really dedicate all my effort to understand the biology of metastases to the brain. And the reason is that today, when one diagnoses a patient with metastases to the brain, their life expectancy can be measured in months, and there's very little that we can do about that. What we have found, and it's well known, is that tumor cells that grow in the brain are highly resistant to chemotherapy. And there was an explanation to that said that it must be the blood-brain barrier, that is a specific vasculature that does not allow chemotherapeutic drug to exit the circulation and kill tumor cells. In fact, most research shows, and especially clinical research, that by the time of diagnosis, the blood-brain barrier is leaky and does not even exist. We know that because in many tumors that grow in the brain, cerebral edema is a well-known finding. Well, if you have edema, it means that the vasculature is leaky. And we asked the question differently. What else in the brain can render those cells extremely resistant to therapy? Some months ago, we published our paper. It took us about 2.5 years to prove it, that a stromal cell in the brain called an astrocyte, whose physiological role is to maintain stability in the brain, to help neurons survive and so on. Astrocytes, if they establish a communication with tumor cell, protect the tumor cells from chemotherapy. We know the mechanism, we know how they do it, and we now begin to interfere with the protective function of astrocyte to tumor cell, and fortunately it's extremely successful to the point that the clinical trial almost ready to begin.
That's amazing. And your other finding was that cancer cells from different types of tumors all behave the same in the brain.
In some respects they behave the same, because when they encounter the stroma of the brain, the astrocyte, the microglia, and the blood vessels in the brain, these are quite stable. and they interact with the successful tumor cells. Successful would mean that they can grow in the brain in a very similar manner. So the common denominator to metastasis in the brain, be it from lung cancer or breast cancer or melanoma, is that they interact with the same stromal cells in the same manner. In other words, the microenvironment happens to be a common denominator, and if we can target that common denominator, whether the tumor originated from the lung or from the breast, I would hypothesize should not make a great deal of difference.
That is very encouraging. It almost implies that if you have metastases to the brain, that particular form of tumor may be treatable.
Our experimental results suggest that whether the metastases originated from lung cancer, breast cancer, or melanoma, the treatment was very, very effective regardless of the origin of the metastases.
Fascinating work. So what's your next step?
The next step is I declare when I finish a lecture that I did not deliver today on brain metastases, that if you have a sick mouse, please send him to me. The question is, will this approach work in the clinic where the disease is established for years rather than months? And men and mice, although they're mammals, they have a great deal of differences. So the great challenge is to translate now this basic finding to the clinical reality. And if it is, it will tell us that brain metastases one treats in this direction, lung metastases a different way, liver, whatever. Every organ has a unique stroma, unique microenvironment. And using the Paget hypothesis, I advocate that one can attack cancer either by targeting the seed or by targeting the soil. The seed is extremely heterogeneous. Tumor cells are genetically unstable and they create tremendous heterogeneity, whereas the microenvironment is far more stable. And if we can only understand the interaction of the microenvironment with the tumor and interfere with that interaction, we stand a good chance of treating cancer in a very different approach, but in a success that hopefully will be a major success.
Thank you very, very much.
You're very welcome.